With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, welcome back to The Female Gaze. I'm Jessie Katz, and joining me today is someone who will surely be a familiar voice to many of you, my soul sister and co-host of the Soul Sisters podcast, Dara Golub. Hi.
Hi, Jessie.
So nice to be reunited.
This is the best. I have missed you.
I've missed you too. So Alana is on vacation while we're recording this, and so it was always the plan that whenever we needed some reinforcement, we would enlist our favorite, our one and only, Dara. So it's great to have you, and very apropos, because you are a musician, and we've spent many, many hours talking to musicians. And so we have a very special guest in studio with us today, AJ Lambert. Hello. Welcome.
Hi.
Thanks for joining.
Thank you. I thought you looked familiar to me. Why do you look familiar to me?
I love that. I wonder if it would be possible from the band that I was part of, Parlor Tricks.
That could be possible.
That's possible.
Is that a local
It was
situation?
Yes, we were local like 2011, 2016, 2017.
Possible.
Three ladies singing harmony. Yeah. It's possible. It's also possible I look like
you have
people.
One of those faces.
Yeah, I think that might be the case too.
No, I don't think that's good.
Well, I'll take it.
Maybe you're just friends from another life.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Okay, so AJ is a singer. So we are very excited to dig into all of your new work that you have coming out, a new album that is actually being released on the day that this episode posts.
Oh,
so
sweet.
It's very perfect. It worked out wonderfully. You're also the daughter of Nancy Sinatra and granddaughter of Frank Sinatra.
Yes.
Have to mention it because we have some questions for you about that legacy and how it pertains to the female gaze, especially because you're someone who has carved out this amazing career of reinterpreting old songs, both from the family catalog and the greater catalog. And it's an interesting time to revisit a lot of that old stuff.
There's a lot to dig into with that stuff, isn't there?
Yeah. So we will be digging momentarily. But first, I'm going to ask AJ and Dara to join me in a round of Float Your Boat and Be in Your Bonnet.
All right.
Okay. So
I've been looking forward to this. I just have to say off the bat, since this is my first time on The Female Gaze, I'm such a fan.
Oh, thank
you. I love what you've done. I love Alana. I'm just like, I hope to live up to this.
Well, we couldn't have gotten here without you. I cut my chops with you, really. So.
Well, you have upped your game exponentially. You guys are so smart and so funny. And so, I'm excited.
Well, you've set me up to then kick it to you to start us off with Float Your Boat.
Ah, Jesus. Float Your Boat. Okay.
Yes. What's floating your boat this week?
I had a few options that I was kicking around.
Uh-huh.
All of them are pretty mainstream and like pretty obvious.
Okay.
And so it was kind of, I narrowed it down between Roma and Amy Sherman Palladino.
Oh.
If you've talked about one already on the podcast that I haven't heard,
we haven't.
I can do the other. Okay.
So you can do both.
I'm going to go with Roma.
Okay.
It is amazing. Alfonso Cuarón, like basically a fucking masterpiece and the epitome of the female gaze, I want to say.
It?
Not only because of the story and like basically it's just him wanting to understand and revisit and live with these women who raised him, but the filmmaking of it is everything that the female gaze is.
Huh.
And what is that? Because I did have to I'm like, when I listen to this podcast, I'm saying to myself, okay, female gaze is such this murky thing that I'm always trying to say, what is it exactly are we talking about?
Yeah.
And with this film, it's like, it's all about empathy. It's all about watching. It's all about emotion. It's all about just training the camera, putting it in one place and watching these women live. And you feel their emotion through that. And it's not trying to, with fancy cuts, with fancy editing, with too much dialogue, with anything, trying to you know, put anything in our heads or like,
right.
or just insert himself.
Mm-hmm.
Alfonso Cuarón was the DP, and he just like,
oh, I didn't
he
know
puts
that.
The camera in a way so that you're just following their lives.
Yeah.
And it's gorgeous. The performances are gorgeous. The uh-huh. everything about it is like just stunning.
I love that. I love that you chose a movie that was directed and shot by a man.
And written
and he wrote it
conceived
too.
Okay. of wow. by a man mm-hmm. about women that he loves mm-hmm. trying to understand them.
Very
and
cool.
yeah, so I could go on and on.
And she has all the Oscar buzz.
I can't wait. I have it like I
And it's
Sorry,
one of those, you know, it's like a black and white, not much yeah. happens. And you think, okay, is this going to be a fun time? Am I going to enjoy myself? And, you know, it has like humor. It has all of the things.
It's, uh-huh. Right. It's, but it's living the life of a woman.
Living the life of a woman.
Right.
In a,
which is something that I think people don't think people are going to go see. You know, it's like often yes. I think male producers and studio heads feel like that's not enough. To sell tickets or to get views, because I know it's also on Netflix.
Right.
But I want to see that kind of movie. And I think it's proven over and over again that many of us do. Men and women
yes.
want to see those kinds of stories.
Well, and it takes the right director, right? Mm-hmm. It takes the right man to figure it out. I think,
yeah.
you know, on the one hand, somebody like, for me, like, as much as I love his movies and his art, I love David Lynch, but he does not get women at all. And I don't like his female characters at all. But then on the other hand, somebody like Quentin Tarantino, who's, like, very much in the movie all the time, I feel like if I'm ever feeling down about the state of women, I'll watch a Quentin Tarantino movie and I'm like, okay, great, because he gets it. He
yeah.
totally gets it.
I often think about how Tarantino is one of the best creators of female characters
yeah.
in the history of cinema, even though when I think about Tarantino, I don't think about him necessarily as
no.
being this great like feminist icon, but really his characters have it. I mean, Shoshana is like one of my favorite characters of all time.
I think it's because he doesn't make he makes it equal, like, just by virtue of the fact that, oh, it's a character.
Right.
It's a person
uh-huh.
doing this stuff. And the man's
right.
doing
it's not
it,
like the
and
men,
the woman's doing it.
Right.
It's
not like
not
the men get
like,
to do all this stuff, and then the women have to be there to support what those men are doing.
Or
they,
the opposite.
Doing it.
It's not the opposite either, where it's like
sure,
on a
right.
pedestal, and it's like, oh, we're making
right.
a woman a big deal. It's like, don't make it a big deal. We're equal. Like if he
yeah.
says, like if someone says that in a film, it's kind of like, thank you. Like I don't
mm-hmm.
I don't need to. I don't know. That's what bugged me about Wonder Woman. It's like
yeah. So we ranted about Wonder Woman on this podcast recently.
I fucking hated it. I just thought it was so. I thought it was more sexist.
I agree.
Like, way more.
I felt like I was watching Pretty Woman at a certain
totally.
Point. I was like, why is there a whole scene about her trying on dresses?
Totally.
What movie is this?
And like, it's there were two movies out at the same time with that fucking bugged me. It was that
uh-huh.
and that Atomic Blonde movie with Charlize.
Oh yeah,
Theron. It's like,
I
of
saw
course
that
they had
I
to put
it.
A lesbian scene in there. Of course
oh, right.
they did. They have
right.
to. Like, she can't just be a badass. She has to also fuck a woman, so that in a
right.
male gaze
not,
way.
And
right.
it wasn't like, oh, part of a relationship.
Right,
it was
no.
just like,
it
was
no,
just
it was
like,
out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere because they have to.
Right.
Because
in case men are too turned off by how violent she
totally.
Is.
Totally. It's like, oh, well, we have to have her fuck another hot chick. And it's
oh,
so then they'll come
point.
See it. It's so fucking annoying. Anyway.
Wow.
How interesting. Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
Female gaze.
I'm telling
yeah.
you, man.
Okay.
Watch.
I haven't. I need
watch
to explore proof. It with that.
Yes.
Watch Death Proof.
Oh, my God.
And not because they kick his ass. Like, not because of that specifically.
See, kicking, like.
It's not that.
Yeah, it's not even
it's
about
not that.
That. It's more about, like, their friendships, their
watch
whole thing
Death
at the beginning.
Death Proof and how he cares about the people. He cares about the women as people and not about, like, that they're women and, like, we have to
right.
treat them with, you know, care.
Right.
It's like, they're people. And watch fucking Kill Bill, both
mm-hmm.
of them. And she's
again,
just, like.
Yeah.
The best character in the world. She's great.
As a badass, but also from a in, from
she's
a,
also
from
a mom.
Perspective. Uh-huh.
She's a mother, and she's looking for a kid, and she reunites with
yeah.
her child, and it's about, you know, the whole ending of that movie, those movies, is the fact that she's reunited with her child, and that was her whole goal.
Right. It's like real motivations
right.
are ascribed to these characters, as opposed to Wonder Woman, where her real motivation
which is
becomes
yeah,
about
Wonder
like
Woman,
her
man.
Love for Chris Pine.
Yeah,
right.
fuck that.
And I don't know, there
I
shouldn't be
movie.
Like a less of a standard for superhero movies, but there kind of is. It's like the motivations in those in
yeah.
movies like that are very rarely something that you say, oh, that's.
But But to present yourself as Wonder Woman did, as this is a movie about female empowerment,
well, we did that
and we're
going
to start. No, but even the movie, I think, sets out with those intentions of being on that island, and it's all these women warriors, and there aren't even any men in sight. And then when she leaves the island, everything is about the love of this man.
Yeah.
It kind of forgot what its mission statement was. Anyway,
I hate that movie. Sorry.
Great float your boat.
Okay. Everyone see Roma.
Everyone see Roma.
I got to see Roma now.
Yeah, I know, me too. It's in my Netflix queue.
It's in your computer.
Yeah. Okay, so my pick for the week is a recent profile, which kind of relates to what we've been talking about, a recent profile in the New York Times of the director Amy Heckerling.
Yeah,
Did anyone see it?
But I love her.
It's awesome. Yeah, she's amazing. So Taffy Brodesser Ackner wrote this profile, and Taffy is like the
amazing.
Best celebrity profile.
Such
like
a great writer.
Everything she writes. Yeah. She also really puts herself in it, which I think is so interesting, and kind of describes the experience of what it is to try to unlock these really kind of unknowable people. Sometimes
I just read her thing in the Times about Margot Kidder. She wrote like a you know how they do every year, they'll say like the people who died,
oh, right.
And like they'll do a magazine piece about
them. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she wrote the one about Margot Kidder, and it's fucking amazing.
Wow.
It's so just what you're saying, really into the human.
Right. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she wrote this piece about Amy Heckerling because Clueless is now coming to Broadway. And Taffy basically is trying to figure out in this piece what happened to Amy Heckerling, because she had these insane hits right out of the gate. She did Fast Times when she was in her 20s, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. She did Look Who's Talking, which actually was about how she
got did not know that.
Pregnant with Harold Ramis when she was married to somebody else, and then ended up raising the kid on her own.
Oh,
yeah,
juicy.
And she said, so she had a girl in real life, but she changed it to a boy in the movie so that the studio execs wouldn't be like, "Oh, this is just about your life and your problems."
Because
God forbid, be able to write about a real woman's problems. and then she made Clueless, and then she made a few other films after that, but none of them hit the way those earlier films did, and she kind of has felt lost to obscurity for all these decades. So Taffy is trying to figure out what really happened, and Amy Heckerling is a very self-deprecating person who doesn't want to blame Hollywood, doesn't want to say it's because the male gatekeepers kept her out or whatever. Taffy even has this quote by Amy that says, "You go, well, maybe if I had been more brilliant and thought of better solutions, it would have come out great. Or maybe if I was, you know, like more of a schmoozer who knew how to work with people," you know, turning it inwards. So then I just want to read this little bit that Taffy wrote, because Taffy basically is like, no. This was also part of the bigger system. And Taffy is talking about how sexism is not always what you think it is, and it can work in much subtler ways that could derail a career like Amy's. And she says, "Sexism in Hollywood doesn't always mean not being hired. It doesn't always mean that you are sexually harassed. Sometimes sexism is a plethora of compliments that make your brilliance a constant exception. Mm-hmm. Sometimes sexism is taking someone who has self-doubt, like many creative people do, and yielding to it instead of propping her up. Sometimes sexism is taking the extremely relatable content of a person's soul and not being able to figure out why it would be worth the trouble to release it, not taking seriously the women who would find comfort and release in a movie that so clearly understood their complicated emotions."
Fuck yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is what we're saying about Roma. You know,
totally.
A movie like that
totally.
Is enough. We want to see that.
Right. And it's also that kind of sexism is the most kind of, I wouldn't say most important, but it's so important and like the trickiest thing to switch behaviors for. The other stuff is so much clearer, so much more like in your face, and we know how to talk about it. This stuff is like pointing to it is, you know, we could do it all day long, all the time.
Right.
But it's just as important.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyways,
I feel like
so.
They do that with people all the time. Like, I feel like they do that with Cat Power all the time, where it's like, it's not about like, some people find it where it's like the vulnerability, you know, I'm putting air quotes, by the way, otherwise known as just being human, who's you know, got depth and stuff.
Yeah.
And they're just kind of like, well, you know, we have to coddle her, and we have to understand that, like, you know, she's got blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, or she could just be a complicated person.
Right.
There's that too.
Right.
Like, you know, I don't know. It bugs
me. And complicated is attractive.
Yeah,
complicated is compelling artistically. I mean,
but they always mention it like it's a detriment, like it's something to overcome, and it's something to, I don't know. It just bugs me.
Yeah. Well, that article was the float your boat, the things that brings up our bees. But
is the Clueless musical a boat or a bee? for you?
That it's going to exist.
Yeah.
You know, I never see any of these movie remakes into musicals, so I don't know. I have no idea what to expect. I don't know if they ever turn out well.
Remakes as remakes give me anxiety. For that, like
sure.
Any reinvention of a beloved classic.
Uh-huh.
Can I just say, I haven't seen A Star Is Born for that reason. I'm afraid.
I get that.
Because but you I, loved one you, of the originals?
Yes.
Which one?
The Judy Garland one.
Okay.
I'm afraid.
I understand that.
Yeah.
And are you curious still? Like, are you curious, but you don't want it to be ruined?
It's not that. It's just like, do I want to waste 2 hours? And I have this fear of like, fuck, I just don't want to spend, like, my time is, yeah. I'm worried. And people who have seen it have told me it's basically
it's
a Bradley Cooper indulgence.
Masturbation motion.
That's what I hear. Which could be okay, I guess. I don't know.
I have not seen either any of the previous iterations.
Okay.
So I don't have that, like, you know, going into it, but I did not find it to be like a Bradley. I found myself mesmerized more almost by Lady Gaga than
okay.
him.
Okay, so I have spoken too much about this movie on this podcast so far,
okay.
So I'm
going to
limit myself
okay.
a little bit, but I will say another Float Your Boat that I was going to mention, but I decided to cut it for time, but now it's kind of relevant to this. Manuela Dargis just wrote this article, also in the Times, about how the Me Too era has changed the way that she looks at movies now as a film critic, and it's a very interesting article, and she covers a lot of things, but she mentions A Star Is Born, and she made a point that I thought was interesting. She appreciates the fact that in the new Star Is Born, the camera spends equal time, she feels, on both of their bodies, which she felt was unusual and refreshing. But she did point out how, of course, in sex scenes, the camera is on her face and not his face, which obviously it is because it always is. And I just thought to myself, I like tried to reimagine a love scene in a Hollywood movie where you're watching the man's face instead of the woman's face. And it felt so revolutionary to
yeah.
me to just imagine seeing that.
Yeah.
Like that yeah. the camera is there to give pleasure by watching a man having
right.
sex instead.
Right.
That would
huh.
be a better way to go?
It could be.
I don't know.
It could,
like,
it doesn't have to only, maybe it's back and forth. But the point is that the camera right now is used to give the male audience pleasure by watching
right.
the female character having sex.
It's like that porn that I haven't seen that I hear a lot about because I date really young people. And I hear about this thing where it's like point of view. Have you heard about this?
Well, oh, point of view porn?
Yes.
No.
Where it's
is like,
it like
a VR
it's
kind
like
of thing?
A, no, it's like, I guess they wear a camera, like the guy wears a camera
oh.
and fucks somebody. So you're
right.
like, when
so
you're
you
watching
feel,
the
right.
porn, you get to be fucking the person.
Yeah, that's okay. basically what movies always
right.
are.
Right.
Just less explicitly, but
yeah.
basically same idea. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. yeah.
Okay, AJ, what's your float your boat?
I just saw one of the current films in the cinema.
Oh, good
and
for you.
I am also going to bring up a newer one,
uh-huh.
which is The Wife. Have you seen
oh,
The Wife?
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, The Wife. The Wife is something I had no idea about. I'd never heard of it. And it was like, you know, one of these things just popped up. And it's Glenn Close and
oh, yeah.
Jonathan Rice. Price. And they're a couple who, I can't talk too much about it without giving it away, but suffice to say, she is kind of she's put to be the long-suffering wife of a Nobel Prize-winning author. And what happens to someone who is the wife of someone who gets that much success and who has to kind of... Oh, man, I can't talk too much about it if you haven't seen it.
Well, what do you love about it?
What I love about it is the fact that it depicts that feeling of being sort of the prop-up person of a man, of a successful man, and the behind-the-scenes that goes into it
wow.
that no one ever sees.
Mm-hmm.
And in this movie, it's like way more than you think it is.
Got it.
Hint.
Wait, sorry, you said this is a true story or not a true story?
I don't think it's a true story,
okay.
but I wouldn't be surprised if it is a true story.
Yeah, because, in a way, it's a very true
yes,
story.
Yes, and I have
you
to
know
say,
what I'm
I don't
saying?
Want to jump ahead, but this reminds me of the article that you wrote in Vanity
yes.
Fair about your
yes.
grandfather's birthday party.
I was just going to say.
And how your grandmother threw this birthday party for her ex-husband, and how you describe that she's basically the woman who propped him up, and that you don't know if he would have had the success without her.
Yep.
And it's fascinating to read how, without taking away anything from him, and like he was an incredibly compassionate and loving man, and obviously the talent, but that her role is something that we don't hear about or talk about, and that, you know, behind the scenes.
But it's also complicated in this movie, and I think maybe in their relationship too, but I don't know. The idea that, like, she doesn't really want to be recognized, and the reasons why she doesn't want to be recognized. It's really, really interesting. Really, really cool.
Okay, good movie recs, guys.
Yeah.
Appreciate this.
Yeah.
All right, Bee in Your Bonnet. Dara, what you got?
Buzz, bitch.
Alana will appreciate that.
Is that the catchphrase?
Yeah,
she
it
does
is.
It so well.
It
okay.
Are you debating?
I am kind of still debating, but I'll just go for it. And I feel like, so my Bee in My Bonnet is, I guess, the ride that I took watching Taylor Swift's concert of her final show on her Reputation tour has been turned into a Netflix concert documentary.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Must have been a bad ride if this is your Bee.
No, it was. The Bee in My Bonnet is basically, I think it like speaks to more of how I relate to pop culture and how, like, I haven't heard anything. I haven't been aware of Taylor Swift's, like, music since the drop of her Look What You Made Me Do, which, like, there was people loved it. People hated it. I loved it. I hadn't, like, then explored what she was doing after that. So I didn't know what the album was like.
Uh-huh.
So when her concert starts, and it's, like, the biggest stadium tour, like, Beyonce style, and she starts it, it's very sort of like self-important beginning, and then there's just it's just dancers, and you know, probably she's singing along with a track, and my feeling was like, what the hell, Taylor Swift? Like, this is not what I know you to be, and it's not to say that an artist should not evolve and like go for what speaks to them and you know, move with the times, but I was so like upset by a lack of like musicianship, and then I continued to watch. And you
I
know,
feel like this is like you had similar feelings for Saint Vincent, right?
Oh my God! Well, don't get me started. Yes, exactly. But Saint Vincent was much more like there was a total like sort of reverence to the music that I feel like a lot of this was like I'm going for a big I'm a stadium act now, and when I get this big, and part of my feeling was like, and I think that she has been doing this for many years, but the costumes were just like. These sparkly leotards, and like, great, you know, I love going to watch Beyonce. I want the artist who's going to move into a different genre to be there naturally. And it doesn't feel like that's where she shines, where she did strip down and she did have the guitar and she did play the piano and it was gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
And all I could think about, sorry to bring this up again, A Star Is Born, was this like incredible natural talent for music who then is on SNL singing like, some bullshit that just like doesn't speak to something real and a depth, and it was just
so
like,
you're saying Taylor Swift is selling out like the fictional alley in A Star Is Born.
Yeah, I guess I am. Yeah. I mean, and but
she might not stay in that lane forever.
And I don't want to. Right. I don't want to be someone saying. I don't want to say that's not okay.
Right.
To
does it feel different for you than like what Gaga does in real life? Like if
it
you
does.
Look at
it does because I feel like Gaga stuff is coming.
In Vegas
Gaga
are fucking crazy.
Is coming from an actual place of like inventiveness and like weirdness and a place of showmanship.
It feels natural.
Taylor cannot dance.
Right.
She like she's not a dancer.
Right.
And so this is a completely false like place for her. She's a musician.
Uh-huh.
Like Gaga is too, but she is a showman.
Right.
And Taylor is not a showman.
No. I feel you.
So it just felt inauthentic.
Okay.
But by the end, I was like, you go. You know, and by the end, there was a cutesy little ending, and I was like, I appreciated her kind of like nod to like, I don't know what I'm doing, you know, and so it came around.
Uh-huh.
And also, I think her fans appreciate this, and her fans have been on this ride with her, and so they probably feel less of like, whoa, what's going on here?
All right, so. Well, you don't have to sugarcoat your Bee. It was a Bee, and that's fine. Yeah.
I'm sorry, guys. I'm apologizing for my, no, yeah.
So
I do recommend it for anyone who is.
Can I say something though? A friend of mine texted me this morning, has been listening to the podcast, and she said every time you have a guest on and you praise them at the top of the show, they say, no, you're wrong. I'm nothing. I'm not worthy of everything that you just said about me. And she was like, you have to tell your guests to stop apologizing. Well, and I'm going to tell you, Dara, don't apologize for your opinion.
Don't apologize. No, I was joking. It was more of a joke of but
okay, that's a good one.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay. My B is short. I received an email over the holidays on a mass list that I'm on from my former gynecologist in LA, who was offering her patients a discount on a procedure that reduces fat and tightens skin tissue in one office visit.
The gynecologist?
Yes.
What the fuck?
Right? Isn't this crazy?
It is crazy.
And the timing of it, that you're sending this to your patients over the holidays when probably everyone feels the worst about their bodies of the entire year.
Super bizarre.
I mean, also so LA. I'm so LA. Glad I don't live here anymore.
So super LA.
On every level.
That's bad,
and
dude.
I've been thinking, like, should I? I'm going to craft a letter. I don't even know where to begin.
Unsubscribe.
Yeah. I wish I still went to her so I could stop going to her.
Dude, that is...
Yeah, I could see that from, like, a plastic surgeon, like, mass email. Like, I don't
and
get
that.
And
even then, don't send it during the holidays.
Fuck,
don't send it at all, but especially don't send it then. Ugh. Gross.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's my B.
Wow.
All right.
That's a good B.
Good one. Thank you. AJ,
that's
what's...
a B minus. Horrible.
Serious.
Shit.
All right, what do you got?
All right, well... I have two.
Good.
Fuck.
Great.
I don't know. I don't want to have
you were just telling us that you generally have more bees than boats.
I have
so.
Way more bees than boats, and it sucks. I'm sorry.
Sure,
but my main thing, this was not this week, but my general bee has been about the fact that the Tumblr thing happened, where we've taken out one more aspect of sex work that was kind of like a safe haven for women, but also just people. Uh-huh. And I just hate that they've done this and that they've now put it back however many years to where it's in the shadows again, and people are going to have to find different ways. Certain people who are using Tumblr for sex work are going to have to find that other shady ass way to do it and make a living. And it fucking sucks, and I hate it, and it's still bothering me.
Can we just...
people who are affected by it in my life, and I hate it, and I think it sucks.
So. What is the Tumblr?
So they've restricted nudity, and they've restricted content on Tumblr, so that people who were using it as a means of, you know, promoting services or promoting, you know, webcam stuff or whatever work that they do, and now it's taken away from them as a venue to do that.
And I didn't even know that this was a big part of Tumblr until this happened. And I was reading about
it's
the
like
outrage.
It's like a safe place for people to use that for their work. And now it's gone. And it just feels like, I don't know. I don't like the fact that, you know, it's this oppressive thing that's then forcing it back into the shadows. And it obviously is going to disproportionately affect women.
Of course.
And it's disproportionately going to affect people who have a limited income that comes from that. It's I just think it's very fucked.
Yeah.
But my more generalized be about this week is, and this sounds so lady, and I hate that I'm in this boat. I'm 44 years old.
Okay.
And I am dating people on the Tinder.
Oh, wow.
And I find it very interesting because of this specific age gap. I am 44, and the people I tend to date are in their early 20s.
Wait, what? Can you tell me what your age range is set to on Tinder?
It is from legal to about 25.
Oh, amazing.
Very young.
Amazing.
Which is great. And I love it. It's great. It's fantastic. But there's this aspect of it that I'm going to sound like such an old person here. I don't get this ghosting. What are they? Okay, so no, I'm not talking about like.
Welcome to the mess.
Yeah, but dude, I'm not talking about like you've had the date or whatever. And also, by the way, I just use it for sex. I don't want a relationship. I've been married twice.
Uh-huh.
I have a child. Like I don't want any of this stuff. But, and that's the thing that I think is so fucking annoying about it, is that they think that a woman coming into this, like, I think they assume that it's like, she's gonna get clingy and get needed. I'm like, dude, I just want to bang and I don't need to see you again, ever.
Do you say that in your profile?
I say not looking for anything serious.
Yeah, and they still don't believe
it. And what happened? So you're saying you meet them and get ghosted or what?
No, I'm like in, okay, you want to hear the best, okay, this is the best one. I have to share this because it's so good.
Please.
So I was in Hawaii by myself because it was a long story, but I had to shoot some stuff for a video. I had to shoot some stuff for a video in Hawaii. And so I was over there by myself with my camera, and I was filming stuff for this thing that has to come out when the record comes out, taking shots of all this beautiful stuff. And I was like, I'm here alone for 3 days. I'm going to see what's what. And I hooked up with this soldier who was really lovely because, you know, they got a lot of army and whatever. So, and they're always down. So that was fine. And then this guy matches with me and he's like, I'm here from Australia. This is all on the phone, right? On the app. I'm here from Australia. So clearly there won't be anything serious. And I was like, dude, that's great. Fantastic. I'm here. Fantastic. Hit me up, whatever. And he goes, fine, where are you staying? I'm like, I'm staying at this hotel. He said that. He goes, I'm staying at this hotel. I was like, I'm here. I'm in the same hotel as you.
Easy peasy, let's do this.
Easy peasy, right? Well, fucking, so this is so funny to me. It wasn't funny at the time. But so he's like, oh, that's so funny. I was like, and I think what scared him was I was like, are you, because I know what he looks like, right?
Right, yeah.
And he's in the property that I'm in, right. Like on the beach that I'm at, and I can see him. I'm like, are you wearing a gray shirt? And
while
I'm wearing,
you're talking
like a,
on the app,
yes,
you're looking at him?
I'm like, I'm wearing a yellow bikini, like I'm looking all hot and everything. And he's I don't hear back for a second. I'm like, what the fuck? And then he's like, oh, that's so funny. Like hours later, he's like, oh, that's so funny. Maybe I'll come and knock on your door after dinner with my family. I was like, fine. You know, I'm here by myself. Whatever you think.
After dinner with his family, because how old was he?
Because
like,
his whole family's here. Well, he's no, but he actually was like 26. He was old for me. Yeah. I was like, I'll go outside my comfort zone. Fine. And so he's like, I'll come over after my dinner with my family. I was like, cool. I'm going out for a little bit. I'll be back around 9. Hit me up. Like, I'm in my hotel room in fucking Hawaii alone. And I'm clearly down to have sex.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And he fucking pussied out.
That's the answer.
He goes, I was like, dude, I'm in the bathtub. Like, come on, knock my...
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, making
no
it
response
as easy.
At all.
No. He was like, well, and he keeps being all wishy-washy. So I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And he's like, it's very tempting. I'm like, okay. And then he unmatched me.
What?
And I was in the same hotel room.
Wait, did you see him again?
Yes.
Oh my God.
So wait, no. Let me just say it. This is so fucking hilarious. So the next day, I've been unmatched and I can't communicate with this fucker.
Right.
And he's on the, I walk past him.
Oh,
and
my
I know
God.
Him because I can fucking recognize him.
Oh,
and he
this
like,
is a
look
comedy.
At me.
This
it's so
hilarious.
Fucking ridiculous.
You should definitely write this in a script. A
that's fucking hilarious.
That's amazing.
Ridiculous. Anyway, so that I had to endure that because I'm on this beautiful beach. I'm like, oh, this is so beautiful, except there's this ghoster right next to me.
Literal
crazy.
Ghost.
He's a
haunting
literal
your
ghost.
Vacation. Yeah.
Isn't that fucking weird?
Wow.
Anyway.
It's just like a pussy. What was he thinking?
I don't know. Or why, you know, don't be on
just acknowledge
that.
It.
Right. Or
just
say you know what? I'm with my family. Maybe
yeah.
I thought I could do this, but nah, never mind.
Yeah.
Oh, no harm,
I don't know.
No fail,
men
whatever.
Are idiots and 26 years old, forget about it.
Yeah.
Well, but that's the thing. It's like, normally I don't care because
right.
it's
probably a benefit.
We're all here to have sex and then move on.
Right, exactly.
Like, that's what I thought anyway. It's like, what the
but
fuck?
Then he's
don't
over
make
there
it complicated.
Gray
no,
shirt,
you just wanted casual sex. It was too big of an ask.
For real.
It's like, oh, no.
I just can't.
Oh, man. Anyway. I hope you've had some success stories on there, too.
Oh, honey, I'm doing good.
Okay, I believe it. I believe it. You have a glow. You seem to be doing okay.
Thanks.
Yeah. Okay. We will be right back with more on AJ, her new music, and the Sinatra legacy.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, so today, January 21st, AJ, you're releasing a new album, your first full-length album, right?
Ooh, yes.
Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you.
It's called Careful You, which is the name of a song by TV on the Radio that you cover. Mm-hmm. So I have to say, you're so badass. The kinds of artists that you cover all on one album mm-hmm. is pretty extraordinary.
Thank you.
You would have covers of TV on the Radio, Spoon, like, you know, cool modern artists like that. And then also cover your grandfather, like the full range, and do it all in this very unique way that sounds like you at the same time.
Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Congrats. I want to back up for a second. Last year, you released an EP called Lonely Songs, which was to celebrate the 60th anniversary of your grandfather's album, Only the Lonely. And you often perform his music live. And you said something that I wanted to ask you about, talking about that album, I believe. You said, I'm so honored to carry on a bit of this tradition of being a song interpreter, and it's so much fun to do it in a modern way. I believe that good music is good music is good music, no matter what era it's from. Now, recently on this podcast, we were talking about how this holiday season, the song Baby, It's Cold Outside became taboo. A lot of radio stations decided not to play it anymore.
I've always fucking hated that song.
Have you? Okay, yeah. So I'm curious to know, you know, when, right, because when you really listen to the lyrics, or even if you casually listen to the lyrics, I think we've always kind of known that song is a little bit date rapey. And then finally this year we had
sucks.
To.
It sucks. It's also just a shitty song. I just hate it. I hate it.
What are you ahing over?
I'm ahing because it like, song. Yeah, well, it just, it evokes something for me, you know, and it's not like.
That too.
What it evokes, but
no, just, I just hate
that nostalgia.
It's a simplistic, stupid melody. I don't like it. I don't, and the lyrics are like a bonus barf.
Okay, I'm calling it agree to disagree for you too. But I'm wondering, looking back, when you're choosing songs, for example, from your grandfather's catalog, are there other songs you've encountered like that where you're like, oh, that doesn't feel right now, or like it doesn't feel right for a woman or for me or in this year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, throw a rock at the catalog.
Yeah.
But listen, okay, so I'm sorry. I didn't realize that you love that
That's
song.
Okay, and I didn't realize that
I don't
mean
to step. I don't mean to step on your, dreams of your of the evoking. I'm sorry. No, I realized that as I was ranting. I was like, that's someone's.
I hadn't given it a thought until I was forced to give it a thought.
I think that there are plenty of those songs, but look, that's just how that, and I'm not excusing it, but that's just what it was. That's just what they didn't even think. They didn't think about like, oh, this might be rapey, or this might be like.
Sure.
They just didn't even think about it. I'm singing in a I'm in a very such interesting situation with this particular thing right now because I have been asked to sing at a kind of like a tribute to Jimmy Van Heusen, the songwriter, he's not a lyricist, he's a music writer, but a lot of so I'm singing all his music in this show that's coming up in February in Palm Springs. It's part of Modernism Week. It's the whole thing, right? And some of the songs that they've picked for me to sing are things like, you know, Love and Marriage and Polka Dots and Moonbeams. And like, so I'm singing these songs. I'm like, I really think that I don't want to sing these because they feel really weird. And there's just a ton of them.
Yeah.
They're everywhere.
Right.
But then you can, some of them you can turn around and feel like you're just by being a woman singing it, it makes it different. One of those songs is Lush Life. For me, like which was on my EP, I feel like that song has to be sung by a woman. And I feel like when it's sung by a man, it's wrong. Like, it's not the song, even though it was written by men.
Right.
I don't know. For some reason,
the intention changes. The whole everything changes.
And it happens with almost every one of those songs, right? Like when I do the Sinatra shows where I do the albums, where I'll do, you know, In the Wee Small Hours, or I'll do Only the Lonely, the entire record of those songs, I don't change the pronouns to suit me because that's not how it's written. That's not what they wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And people are like, well, why are you saying like that? And it's like, well, why not? Like, what? Who cares? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you take issue if, do you have like a certain reverence for that music, that changing the lyrics is sort of not the move?
I for other artists, you would say? Feel that way. Yeah. And actually, my grandfather did it a lot, where he would change stuff, and I don't like it. I don't get it.
The music is the music, and if it's not right, don't sing it.
Yeah. I don't like changing stuff like that.
Yeah. you know, I've been on such a kick with kind of female gaze-y things. Everything has been filtering through this lens for me for months now, and that's kind of why this podcast started. And then I had HBO on over the holidays when I was doing absolutely nothing for a few days, and this Elvis documentary came on. And I all of a sudden kind of remembered, A, that Elvis existed, and B, that I used to be obsessed with Elvis when I was young. I mean, absolutely obsessed with his music, his legacy, everything about him. I just thought he was the coolest, and I could never get enough Elvis. And then I was watching this documentary, and I suddenly was like, I don't know how I feel about Elvis. Mm-hmm. Not that there was anything particular, especially in the documentary, that they were saying about him that was troublesome, but just that kind of guy. That's not my
jam anymore.
No. I'm not spending time thinking about men like that, but I do think about how I grew up and I also watched A Hard Day's Night over the holidays, and I was like, and I was so obsessed with the Beatles. Like, these were all the things that I was obsessed with as a child, and what did I really take away from that for me?
Well, are you saying that some of the Beatles are a very different example from Elvis, I feel.
Yeah, I guess it's just like, these iconic men who, I mean, look, I think there are some trouble details of the history of some of the Beatles, too, sure. You know, like.
And some songs are more.
Yeah, like, yeah. John allegedly was abusive to women. I mean, you know, of course, when you're a kid, you don't think about those things. And especially when you were a person growing up in the 80s and 90s, you were not taught to think about these things. Right. And now it's like when I remember these men that were so important to me, I have to make a decision. Like, am I going to start caring about that part of their legacy, or am I going to just leave it?
I have that with Woody Allen.
Yeah.
That's a really tricky one for me, because it's like,
you're talking to the one of the biggest Woody Allen fans, both of us, but it's really tricky.
It's hard. I mean, especially with, you know, my family, you know, aspect of that is really tough, because I'm close to Mia and, you know, Ronan and mm-hmm. like, it's just I don't feel right. It doesn't feel right. Right. I you know.
Yeah. I mean, so I saw this article where Dean Martin's daughter was asked if the Rat Pack would have survived the Me Too era, and she was like, I don't think so.
I think
you
about
know?
That all the time. Like, how, if we were able to uncover or cared to uncover the stuff from back then that these guys were up to, like, we would have no idols left.
Well, I think it would be everybody to a certain extent. And I'm not saying everybody raped somebody or harassed them, but I think it was so much in the culture for men to just use that power however they wanted to.
Maybe it's cold outside.
Everyone has some skeleton in the closet.
And maybe it's cold outside is a good example of, like, how just, like, sort of mid-level, kind of, like, harmless yet offensive, if you want to look at it in that way, which is absolutely fine to do. Like, that was just totally normal.
And right. For women, too, it was just kind of like, this is the way it is.
Yeah.
Like, oh, brother, here they go again.
And they were happy about it.
Exactly.
And that's what's also hard for us now, to want to go back and maybe judge our mothers and our grandmothers for, like, how are you complacent? And how mm-hmm. did you accept this? And it was mm-hmm. because that was the mm-hmm. time, and that's what they knew. And
well, and to talk about, you know, what you were saying about my grandmother and my grandfather, was that same thing. It's just like, well, you know, it sucks, but look at all the good that's happening.
Right.
He's making millions of people happy and blah, blah, blah. Like, she just didn't. And I remember really specifically when, who was it? Oh, Tiger Woods. There was that whole thing when Tiger Woods, what was the thing with his girlfriend or his wife or something?
Well,
and
he cheated
on her, whatever it was, some cheating shit. Mm-hmm. And it, like, destroyed his career or something. I don't remember the degree to which it destroyed his career, because I feel like I just saw him playing golf, so whatever. But
yeah,
at the
back.
Time, it was like a huge thing.
Yeah.
And my grandmother was pissed at the wife. She was like, what
pissed
in the fuck?
Pissed at the wife for making it a big
deal.
Yes,
because she was like, why are you trashing this man's career? It's just that ingrained, right? It's that ingrained in them to just feel like, you know, they have to be
supportive.
That's
their place, right.
Exactly.
Right.
And it wasn't like, I don't know. She didn't feel, and she, I don't know. She wasn't a weak woman. Like, she was a strong, really, really independent woman. And she felt that way.
Yeah.
So
I think,
you know,
part of it with that older generation, and I think you and I got into this a bit. We talked to, like, Jane Birkin once about when Me Too was kind of peaking and all these French actresses were coming out being like, ugh, that's just the culture. And, you know, everyone's overreacting and this is what it means to flirt and blah, blah, blah. I think there's this feeling from an older generation that is like, we had to put up with all this shit, you know? And like when you have had to deal with it and make it okay for yourself, I think it's really hard to, towards the end of your life, be like, oh, it wasn't okay.
Right.
What does that say about all the decades you spent putting up with this terrible shit?
Exactly. Sure. And I think that's the reaction I had to that song, which like, if I think about it, I'm happy to put it aside completely, but there is a sense from Baby It's Cold Outside to every piece of art and culture that we're talking about from decades past, like, do I have to give this up as something that I hold dear?
So AJ, like you could have completely put aside all of the musical legacy, right, that you've inherited and completely struck out on your own. You've decided to do this combination of the two. Mm. So then what do you take from your grandfather's legacy as that kind of guy, you know, the emblem of that era? I don't know anything about the details of his personal life, but I know what he represented.
See the last segment. I don't know. It's like we're similar.
Yeah.
I don't womanize, manize, whatever the hell it is, because it's mutual.
Right. Mm.
And maybe sometimes back then it was mutual. Yeah. Maybe it was like, hey, I get to fuck Frank Sinatra, fantastic. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm sure there were times where it wasn't equal like that.
Right.
You know? But I am similar to him in that I can't seem to hang on to a relationship for a really long time because of this is a guess based on how much I knew him. It's a constant kind of what's next feeling, like not able to kind of stop. And he was like that too. He was just kind of like whenever, like if he was home for a while and like not working, he'd be like, okay, like when do we go? Like what are we? And then he'd be out and he'd be like, when do we go home? Like it's never correct. It's never enough. It's never.
So what is that?
I feel like that's hard. Like more
Wait, hang
often.
On, but I just want to dig in for a second.
Yeah.
Where do you think that came from in him?
Well, I think in him, I mean, look, he was an only child. He grew up poor and his parents adored him. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. It's just like he kind of came up as you can do anything. You're special. And so he just didn't occur to him that he couldn't do anything.
But
you
why the restlessness?
To do more and do better. Like I always like to say an example of that, and this is sad to say, but I really, if you think about it, it's really true. Uh-huh. I think Ava Gardner is like my grandmother, like the 2.0 version. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like it's her, but like the upgrade.
Why?
What if you picture them,
okay,
right?
Uh-huh.
They're like dark-haired, beautiful women. Uh-huh. And she's like the upgrade of what he already had.
Got it. Okay.
Because he got successful and then he goes into the newer model.
Interesting.
I really believe that's what it is.
Yeah.
And that's why he was so obsessed with her.
Huh.
That's what I think it was.
Yeah.
Because he never stopped being a friend of my grandmother's.
Right,
like he never didn't love her.
Uh-huh.
He just, that was just how it was.
Sure.
Well, when your life gets so gigantic. Like, I just can't imagine, you know? Like,
well, and being used to everyone loving you your whole life, you know?
But what I was wondering if you feel, if that strikes you as a more male, sort of syndrome of feeling like, I can't be tied down. I'm not going to just, like,
I'm
tie myself to one
thing. I'm here to tell you I don't think it is. I mean, for me, that only has come about recently because I finally kind of know who I am.
Mm.
You know, I was married to two wonderful people, and they're both wonderful, wonderful men. They're great. But for various reasons, we didn't work out, and it's just better for me personally to not, I just can't, part of me can't do that or doesn't want to do that. That's just not in my DNA, literally.
Right.
So
I just feel like it's harder for women to be able to assert that and not be like, ooh, like, well,
well, and also, to be fair, I have my child. I have, you know, I how do I say that? I had a family and have since moved on to be able to say,
right,
I don't need a
partner
in that.
To have that.
Right.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's not a shrug. I think it's a... It's an applause.
Yeah, exactly.
If it's making you happy,
that's also not to say that my daughter doesn't have an amazing father who's with her also. Right. Like, we have joint custody of her. It's not like I'm, like, raising her by myself.
Right.
You know, she has both parents. It's just in a different sense.
Sure.
So.
Right. Yeah. When did you start singing?
Well, I actually started my music stuff as a bass player. So I was a bassist for many, many years out here when I lived out here. And I lived out here for 14 years. And I was in a band called Looker. I was in a band called Here We Go Magic. I was in, like, I played with the Homosexuals when they reunited. That was, like, for a minute. And basically, I played other people's music for all that time.
Okay.
And I loved it. Uh-huh. I really, really loved it. And then I just started to feel like I wanted to sing more because actually I got better as a singer from teaching music to little kids, which is what I did right after I had my kid. Like, I didn't work for a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that I was also a music supervisor for films and TV and stuff.
Okay.
So I didn't work for a long time. And when I started working again, I was a teacher.
Uh-huh.
And it really helped me with singing. And I was like, you know what? I want to try this idea where I have a pianist and me, and we just kind of strip stuff down and do, you know, like old school lounge act, but with whatever songs are good, which also came from my Sirius show, which is about that concept of it doesn't matter where it comes from. Like, if it's good, like, let's just see where it goes and see if people can find the similarity between, you know, Sammy Kahn and Jimmy Van Heusen and David Bowie. Because I feel like it's there, but some people don't.
Yeah. I'm super curious how you choose, like, how you make your selections, because it is so all over the place. But yet most of the tracks on your new album are covers of male fronted bands.
Yep.
And so I'm curious if there's a sense of it being less intimidating, more of a challenge, less for to cover either a male or someone contemporary. Is it more hard to cover someone contemporary or to cover someone like your grandfather who is not around and who, like, there have been so many covers of?
Question.
So that's basically two questions. Is it harder to do a male, and is it harder to do a living contemporary artist?
I feel like if it's something I feel like I can sing in a way that's going to bring a different tack to it, then I'll do it. But if it's just covering it because it's a woman who has said what she said, then I don't feel like I can kind of step on what she said. Does that make sense? If I can bring a new part of what I love about covering men is that I like bringing another perspective to something.
To
that
the
they're
lyrics,
writing.
Basically.
Yes. I love the tune, obviously, but if I can't sing the lyrics to the point where it's going to make it interesting for me singing it, then I don't bother. Mm. Like, I'd love to cover, I don't know, Teenage Wildlife, like a David Bowie song, but I'm not going to because it's not going to be any
something
different
new
coming from me, that specific song, you know what I
cool,
mean?
Cool, yeah.
So it kind of doesn't matter to me if it's a woman or a man. It doesn't.
But it's sort of easier to gravitate towards male written lyrics because then you can, like, find something interesting.
It's more interesting.
Have you ever covered your mother?
No. And just also to be fair, I look at this as covering the writers. I'm not looking at it like it's a Frank Sinatra song or a Nancy Sinatra. Like,
Back to the blueprint of the song.
Yeah,
right.
like my versions of the songs my grandfather did are really just torn down because I want to get to the song. Like, I love that he did it, but I want to hear the song. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, you cover I'll Be Seeing You on the new album. Now, I think if you were to place that song in a scene in a movie, it would be two very different scenes placing his version of that song and your version of that song.
Yes.
You know?
Absolutely.
Like, his could be a romantic, like, dancing on the sidewalk, and yours is like the stalker is coming down the hallway for you.
Wow, I hadn't thought of it that way.
Like,
different. For me, that voicing that we did of that, it's very, you know, it's very loud and very intense.
Uh-huh.
And for me, it's like impressing on somebody that feeling of, like, I'm not gonna forget you. I'm gonna, like, it's like, I want you to remember that I am gonna be here. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, it's deliberate.
Right.
That's
right.
Really deliberate.
Yeah.
All those things, thankfully, I have these musicians who can articulate stuff, because I'm a shitty musician. I'm just not, I don't speak music as well as I should. And luckily I can say, can you, you know, do that, like right. do that to make it, and they'll get it because they're amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I mean, we do live, we do, I'll Be Around, and we do Mood Indigo, and they're just, they're not the same at mm-hmm. all, yeah. just mm-hmm. because... I just I don't
well,
think that's interesting.
Right.
I don't like the when the
yeah,
God, I don't
cool.
want to say the names, but like the people who do the like the people who do the like where it sounds the same. Like why are you doing that? Like why bother?
Like
why?
Standard, you mean?
Yeah, like why are you doing that? Don't
or
bother.
Even I'll give a recent example. I've been asking myself why Weezer decided to
oh,
cover
fuck.
Africa I, by Toto because Rivers is doing a straight copy of the original.
Really?
Which is great. I love that
right,
song.
But
why did they do it? I don't get it.
No.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, he's turning out to be kind of a lunatic, right?
yeah.
Have you seen
yeah,
his
but
Instagram?
I think it's clearly always in him.
Yeah.
But have you seen his Instagram?
No.
It's fucking hilarious. I have a low level crush on him. I just think he's but yeah, I don't get that cover
yeah,
either.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Right.
So
I just don't know why it's interesting either for the artist.
Right, and I feel like with standards, there's often a pass where we don't try to think so much about the lyrics or the meaning. It's just, oh, that's a song that we're always going to hear, and it's meant to be sung all the time. And that's
well,
why
and
someone like you or, you know, Cecile McLaurin-Savant, who we've recently talked about, who's really trying to look at it and say, what is there different to say with the song? And there's a reason why I'm singing it, instead of just because the way that I reacted to Baby It's Cold Outside, it just feels good
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
I know it.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
not why we should be
well,
choosing things.
Right. That's but and specific, I think it's just it's specific to the person. It's specific to the singer. It's specific. It's just
it's
not. It's not. And the audience, of
yeah.
course, it's not a blanket.
Yeah,
it can't be. I mean, I know we want to be able to say like, oh, we can't sing "Baby It's Cold Outside," but there's reasons. Like, obviously, it's rapey, and it
yeah.
just. I don't know. It just. But when I do some songs that are from, you know, the in the Wee Small Hours record. For me, if I'm a woman singing those things, it feels very different because I am not, I don't know, it's somehow flipping it around makes it okay.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I saw a kind of musical review performance before Christmas of people doing traditional carols. They were actually all opera singers. It was pretty awesome. And they did Baby It's Cold Outside as a joke, and they had a man and a woman singing it, and they flipped the genders, and it was hysterical. Hearing the woman being that
yeah, yeah.
creepy one, you know? Like, it's just flipping hey. The genders made it feel completely
I mean,
different.
I watched the movie clip in the context of all this controversy, and I understood it in a different way. I've always thought it felt of it was, like, flirty and fun and...
Movie clip?
It's from a movie. The song is from a movie, Neptune's Baby, or not Neptune's Baby. Neptune's
What the hell? Are you kidding?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh, my God. And that is super rapey. Like, date
because she's actually trying to leave.
She's actually trying to leave,
like,
and he's actually grabbing her by the arm
oh,
and pulling
shit.
Her. And she's like,
wow.
She's holding a drink. Like, what's in this drink? Like, that made me be like, okay, now
no.
I understand the intention in a different way. But
Holy
before
no.
I thought, I was like, oh, like, cute and flirty. And, you know,
Dara's always
me.
Our best research historian. I'm so glad to have you back. So helpful with these facts.
Oh, no.
AJ, before we let you go,
yes.
we have to do a quick
what's
round.
That?
This is the hot takes wheel.
Fuck.
So listeners submit topics, and then we all have to go around and give our hot take on the topic.
What's a hot take?
It's like your quick initial thought
got
on
it. Got it.
Yeah.
See,
so
I'm
don't
old.
Overthink it.
Got
it's
it.
A rickety wheel. But
so
I'm
official.
Gonna let you spin it.
Oh,
so
I
give
spin
it a hard
it.
Spin.
On this side.
Yeah.
Cube. Ooh, God, I'm hypnotized too.
Okay. Oh, this is a good one. So this is from our listener at Taylor Martis, and it's TV show you loved as a kid but now see as a bad example.
Wow. I have it right on the tip
yes,
of my tongue.
What is
Three's
it?
Company.
Oh, man.
Fuck.
Wow.
That's
I knew this one was going to make me sad.
Well, think about that.
Well, wow. Wait, but now I'm
because
so curious about it.
Because he was just the perv
it.
Who's
right,
always
yeah,
lurking
like, what
around.
What was their deal? They were friends.
Yeah, but
no
it was all
sexual.
Sex.
Was,
yeah, but
was,
it was all innuendo all the time.
Right. And so.
Like his whole thing, the whole thing was that he was allowed to move in with the two girls because he acted like he was gay. That's why the landlord
wow.
let him in. And in the meantime, he's kind of like gropey, pretend gropey to his roommates all the time.
Nuts.
Did the women think he was gay at the start of
no.
the show? They were in on it.
They're in on it because they just need a roommate.
That would be a fascinating show to revisit.
But
just
I fucking
like,
loved it as a kid. Yeah. I loved it. And I didn't even think.
I mean,
think
he was so fucking funny, John
And
Ritter.
They're just all funny. And
yeah, they
great.
Are. Okay.
Anyway. This is not really exactly to the point, but I've just been thinking about it from our conversation, and I think about it a lot because it's one of my most beloved shows growing up is The Cosby Show, and it's like a tragedy.
Oh, yeah.
So, enough said about that because it's a great, amazing show.
I don't know if that counts.
It doesn't count. It doesn't count.
Pick one that counts. Nice try. Yeah, everyone hates Cosby. Okay, that was easy. Challenge yourself.
I don't know. Like, I'm thinking of shows that I didn't really watch, All in the Family, Honeymooners, stuff like that, which is just, like, crazy.
Yeah.
All in the Family
like,
is funny.
All in the Family is...
I mean, I'm going to go with probably Saved by the Bell. Would probably annoy the shit out of me if I watched it now, right? Because...
Totally.
It was, like, the worst stereotypes.
It's
Kelly Kapowski was the dumb cheerleader. Jesse Spano was the hysterical feminist. Lisa was the rich shopaholic.
Yeah.
And Zach Morris was supposed to be the greatest thing on earth. Why? He had literally no talents. He was good at nothing, which is why he had to make Screech do everything for him. He just had nice frosted hair.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's all you need in 1982.
That was all
okay.
You need.
Sex
true.
In the City. It's really hard to watch. And
I disagree.
I love it.
I
still love it and still will watch it. But it's crazy.
I think Sex and the City holds up in some ways. It's terrible with
it's
race.
It's terrible.
It's terrible with
race.
Trans
it's terrible
people.
With her. With the main central relationship is horrendous.
Her and Big?
Yes.
Yeah, but I would argue the main central relationship of Sex and the City, this
is
a real hot take, between her and Miranda. The very end of the series is all about how when she goes to Paris with what's-his-face, Baryshnikov, Miranda is so distraught. And the central tension of the finale of the show is Carrie and Miranda repairing their friendship.
I appreciate that take, and I will take it because I love watching the show, and I love the show.
Well, there you go. I just saved it
for
you.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so AJ's new album, Careful You, is out now. Are you touring? Where can people see you?
Yes,
tell us.
So right now, we're going to be in Europe for the next week or two, and we're recording some new stuff that will be on the next record, which will be... shortly forthcoming, and then we're going to be touring in the spring as well.
Okay, all over the states,
and back to Europe.
Amazing. So
soon
wherever
to
you
be
are
in the world.
And where can people stay up to date with that? You're not really on social media, are you?
I am.
Oh,
I am.
Are you on Twitter though?
No,
because your mom is fucking amazing on Twitter.
My mom's holding that down fine.
Your mom has hashtag resistance in her Twitter bio. She's
dude,
killer.
She's the best. Yeah. And I love how somehow the right wing finds a way to make Sinatra a totem. It's so bizarre. It's like, do you realize what family you're talking about?
I know.
Like,
and your mom's
real.
Entire feed is just trolling Trump.
Well, and like, and think about my grandfather, okay? Like, his mother was an abortionist, like an illegal abortion provider.
I didn't know
and
that,
And she
actually.
Was the first woman to run for the mayor of Hoboken.
Yeah, wow.
And he was investigated by the House Un-American Activities Committee for being a communist with Orson Welles. It's like, you're barking up the wrong tree,
yeah, not our house,
and
buddy.
Then he,
move
and
on.
Then he
what
voted
is their
for
main,
Reagan
like, why?
Because he voted for his buddy, Ronald Reagan, who was his friend,
okay.
because he's crazy. And
then
he voted
Ronald
Democrat.
Reagan would not have voted for Donald Trump.
No, but
so.
Then he voted for, then he was, he died a Democrat.
Right.
Like, it was like, oh, that was a weird situation. My friend was running for president, and I voted for my friend.
Okay, so you have a website?
Sorry, ajlambert.info.
Boom.
And then we've got Instagram, which is aj.lambert. At aj.lambert.
Nice. Yeah, come on. You're Miss Tinder. I know you can do Instagram.
I know. That's the only app I'm good at. Woo! And then Facebook is ajthelambert.
Nice.
Got it.
So there you go.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us. This
was
amazing.
Thank you. So much fun.
You were a dream guest. Dara.
Yes.
So nice to have you
the
back.
Best to be
Please
back.
Come back soon.
I would love to.
Okay,
anytime.
Good. All right. That's it for the Female Gaze. We'll see you guys next week.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.